Chapter 11. Proving the Drug AIDS Hypothesis, the Solution to AIDS. Most Americans first heard about the psychedelic drugs in the 1960s, when drugs had become chic as symbols of nonconformism. Drugs united nonconformists of all denominations, including rock stars, Vietnam War protesters, sex gurus, and intellectuals. Now millions of Americans are daily users of cocaine, nitrate inhalants, amphetamines, heroin, LSD, marijuana, PCP, and other psychoactive drugs. Since the 1960s, every administration has paid more than its predecessor into the apparently unwinnable war on drugs. This war is fought to restrict America's newest vice by supply control and education. The costs of this war have escalated just as much as the epidemic it fights, to a current level of $13 billion a year. But hardly anybody knows that the highest price of the American drug epidemic is the tens of thousands of drug diseases and drug deaths that it generates each year. Indeed, the drug epidemic appears to have generated the first really new disease epidemic in the Western world since World War II. But epidemiologists and medical researchers are quick to explain that exact numbers are hard to come by because the drugs involved are all illegal and because drugs may not be toxic by themselves. As often in the history of science, the biggest obstacle in finding the truth is not the difficulty in obtaining data, but the bias of the investigators on what data to chase and how to interpret them. The wars on drugs and AIDS are perfect examples. The same government spends $13 billion annually to fight the war on drugs and $7.5 billion to fight the war on AIDS, and nothing has been achieved. The drug warriors use unpopular legal and military force to chase drug suppliers, and the AIDS warriors use scientific methods to chase viruses. These strategies are based on the bias of the current medical establishment that recreational drugs are basically not toxic, and that all diseases of drug addicts are caused by deadly viruses and microbes. For example, science asserts heroin is a blessedly untoxic drug, provided it is injected with a clean needle. Thus, drugs are fought because they are illegal and microbes because they are thought to be deadly. But what if drugs caused AIDS? And what if the AIDS epidemic were the product of the drug epidemic? The public would no longer have to fear microbes, but drugs. Thousands of HIV-positive people would no longer have to accept their inescapable and imminent AIDS death. Drug addicts could prevent diseases by stopping drug use. Hundreds of thousands of HIV-positives would be spared the toxicity of AZT. The war on drugs could be won by pointing out that drugs cause AIDS and other diseases, just as the war on tobacco is being won by pointing out that smoking causes emphysema, lung cancer, and heart disease. An unpopular war against drugs would become a popular war against disease. The answer to these questions depend on unbiased scientists collecting drug AIDS data and doing drug AIDS experiments. But since 1984, the AIDS establishment has either ignored, misunderstood, or even misrepresented drug AIDS connections in favor of its darling HIV. The AIDS establishment has even succeeded in discrediting its very own pre-1984 drug AIDS hypothesis. Hardly anybody can remember that only 10 years ago, AIDS was still considered by many scientists a collection of diseases acquired by the consumption of recreational drugs. Since nearly all early AIDS patients were either male homosexuals who have used nitrate and ethyl chloride inhalants, cocaine, heroin, amphetamines, phenylcyclidine, LSD, and other drugs as sexual stimulants, or were heterosexuals injecting cocaine and heroin intravenously, early AIDS researchers named these drugs as the causes of AIDS. Drugs seem to be the most plausible explanation for the near-perfect restriction of AIDS to these risk groups because drug consumption is their most specific, common denominator. This original drug AIDS hypothesis was called the lifestyle hypothesis. Although official statistics have since replaced drugs by HIV as the common denominator of AIDS, recreational drugs have never left the major AIDS risk groups, i.e. male homosexuals and intravenous drug users, to this date. In fact, the HIV hypothesis has tightened the drug-AIDS connection. Having united all AIDS risk groups, including even hemophiliacs, transfusion recipients, and other categories by the prescription of AZT and other anti-HIV drugs. Indeed, the drug hypothesis stated below provides the only consistent explanation for American and European AIDS. All AIDS diseases in America and Europe that exceed their long-established normal backgrounds are caused by the long-term consumption of recreational drugs and by AZT and its analogs. Hemophilia AIDS, transfusion AIDS, and the extremely rare AIDS cases of the general population reflect the normal incidence of AIDS-defining diseases in these groups, plus the AZT-induced incidence of these diseases under a new name. The key to the drug hypothesis is that only long-term consumption causes irreversible AIDS-defining diseases. Occasional or short-term recreational drug use causes reversible diseases or no diseases at all. With drugs, the dose is the poison. Toxicity of drugs is first a function of how much is taken at any given time. But the untold price of frequent drug use is the cumulative toxicity that builds up over a lifetime, causing irreversible damage. The more drugs are consumed over time, the more toxicity is accumulated. Therefore, it takes 20 years of smoking to acquire irreversible lung cancer or emphysema, and 20 years of drinking to acquire irreversible liver cirrhosis. Therefore, it takes about 10 years of nitrates, heroin, amphetamines, or cocaine to develop AIDS. And therefore, it takes less than a year of the much more toxic drug AZT to cause AIDS by prescription. Surprisingly, even the HIV/AIDS orthodoxy acknowledges that drug use is high among American and European AIDS patients. But it insists that Duisberg's drug hypothesis must be rejected and even censored for ethical reasons. Knowledge of the drug hypothesis would call into question the HIV hypothesis, and questioning the HIV hypothesis would promote unsafe sex and its known and perceived consequences. However, the HIV hypothesis deserves no veto power and no immunity, having achieved no therapy, no prevention, and not even scientific proof. Yet it has vetoed all other alternative AIDS research since 1984. Despite the escalating drug use epidemic, all drug AIDS connections have been ignored since 1984. There are 3 million to 8 million American cocaine addicts and about 600,000 heroin addicts. And a third of all American AIDS patients are intravenous drug users, but there is not a single experimental study funded by the NIH, the CDC, the National Institute on Drug Abuse, NIDA, or any other division of the Department of Health and Human Services that investigates the long-term effects of cocaine and heroin addiction in animals. Millions of mostly male homosexual Americans, including many with AIDS, are addicted to nitrates. But there is currently not even one study funded by NIH, the CDC, or even the NIDA to study the health hazards of long-term nitrate consumption in experimental animals. On the contrary, applications to study the long-term effects of recreational drugs that are consumed by 90% of all American AIDS patients are rejected by federal institutions with the instruction to the applicant that diseases of drug addicts are caused by HIV. The inside story of how the NIDA has rejected four consecutive applications in 1993, in 1994, and twice in 1995, to study the health hazards of nitrate inhalants in mice by one of the world's leading inhalation toxicologists, Professor Otto Raab from the University of California at Davis, and the retrovirologist Peter Duisberg from the University of California at Berkeley, each with the score, not recommended for further consideration, has been told in Chapter 10 and elsewhere. But despite their firm stand against experimental tests of the nitrite hypothesis, both the NIDA and the CDC have just reconfirmed the nitrate Kaposi sarcoma link and have warned about new increases in nitrate consumption. By contrast to the United States' tight fist on drug AIDS money, no money seems enough to sponsor HIV/AIDS research. More than 100,000 researchers in the United States have studied unsuccessfully for 10 years how HIV might cause AIDS, more than one researcher for every one of the 75,000 annual AIDS patients. There are currently at least 200,000 HIV-positive people, including many with AIDS, who are prescribed AZT, DDL, DDC, other DNA chain terminators, and other experimental anti-HIV drugs. Since 1986, the AIDS establishment has spent billions of dollars to bring these drugs into human bodies, but it is yet to fund the first study to test the health hazards of the indefinite prescription of such drugs in animals. No animal tests, just human experiments. Sincere studies of the drug-AIDS hypothesis would measure toxicity over years of recreational or medical use, granting drugs the same long latent periods that HIV is granted to cause AIDS. But no such studies are done. This is not an oversight. It reflects the mindset of the current medical orthodoxy that neither recreational drugs nor even AZT are intrinsically unhealthy. The complete absence of research on the health hazards of recreational drugs has attracted the attention of Republican Congressman Gil Gutnick. On March 24, 1995, Gutnick sent a formal letter to the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Donna Shalala, inquiring why the United States does not fund any research on the health hazards of recreational drugs. 4 months later, on July 10, 1995, the following answer was received from the Secretary. AIDS prevention programs continue to be based on our understanding of scientifically defined HIV transmission modes because prevention of AIDS is prevention of HIV. To deviate funds from scientifically sound findings to those that lack evidence would be unconscionable. Thus, direct experimental tests of the drug hypothesis are currently not possible in the United States. Therefore, the drug hypothesis stands untried in the courts of experimental science. However, even a complete prohibition of experimental science by the current orthodoxy cannot suppress scientific truth forever. Proof of drug toxicity already exists in the scientific literature and is provided for open-minded observers on a daily basis in the form of AIDS diseases in drug users with and without HIV. Despite the current prohibitions on experimental verification, the drug AIDS hypothesis can be verified by the standard tests of scientific hypotheses for their ability to identify plausible cause and, above all, to make valid predictions. The correct hypothesis of AIDS must 1. Explain why an agent is a plausible cause of one or all of the 30 fatal AIDS diseases, and 2. Predict all clinical and epidemiological aspects of AIDS. The drug hypothesis meets these criteria to the letter, but the HIV hypothesis does not. Drugs' plausible causes of AIDS. A plausible cause for immunodeficiency, weight loss, dementia, and muscle atrophy must account for the loss of billions of human blood cells, muscle cells, brain cells, and a plausible cause for Kaposi sarcoma must be a potent carcinogen. At the doses consumed, recreational drugs can easily provide plausible chemical explanations. A person inhaling 1 milliliter of amyl nitrates takes up about 6 times 102 nitrate molecules, that is, 6 times 107 nitrate molecules for every one of the 101 cells of the human body. Just a few of these molecules could kill a cell or cause a cancer if they reacted with specific sites of human DNA. A person prescribed 500 milligrams of AZT per day takes up about 21 AZT molecules, 106 per cell. And just one of these molecules is sufficient to kill a cell, the task AZT was originally designed to meet in chemotherapy. Similar numerical ratios of drugs per human cell apply to cocaine, heroin, and amphetamines used at recreational doses of 0.1 to 1 gram. At these concentrations, drugs significantly alter the metabolism of neurons and other body cells, the reason why these drugs cause the desired psychoactive effects. At slightly higher doses, termed overdoses, they are directly lethal, accounting for the thousands of hospital emergencies and drug deaths recorded annually in the United States. At recreational doses, cocaine, heroin, and amphetamines work as catalysts, accelerating and altering normal human functions beyond normal tolerances. They are also indirectly toxic via malnutrition, insomnia, lack of sanitation, and the many economic and social consequences that come with their high price and illegitimacy. Thus, the drug hypothesis can offer plausible chemical causes and can even offer specific drugs for risk group-specific AIDS diseases. By contrast, the HIV-AIDS hypothesis cannot offer a plausible scientific cause for AIDS. Moreover, in most of these infected cells, HIV is just a dormant gene making no viral molecules at 27. Moreover, in most of these infected cells, HIV is just a dormant gene making no viral molecules at a... There is not even one authentic precedent in biology of a dormant gene having any effect, let alone causing a fatal disease. André Alwoff's dormant bacterial killer virus, phage, is the classical example of what to expect from a dormant gene. Nothing. As long as the virus genes remain dormant, they coexist in monotonous harmony with healthy host bacteria over thousands of generations. But once activated by ultraviolet light, the dormant killer virus wakes up, makes plenty of deadly molecules, and kills its bacterial host within 20 minutes. The same rules of gene control apply to humans. Every human cell contains the same genes as every other, but as long as the nose gene is active and the liver gene is not, the nose will remain a nose for the duration of an individual's life. Thus, the HIV hypothesis cannot provide a plausible chemical cause for any one of the 30 fatal AIDS diseases. This is acknowledged as the Achilles heel of the HIV hypothesis even by its most pious advocates. Drug hypothesis predicts AIDS. Exactly. The correct scientific hypothesis must be able to predict the outcome of an experiment, regardless of whether man or nature is experimenting. The following 8 examples show how the drug AIDS hypothesis meets this condition exactly, and how the HIV hypothesis fails each test. American AIDS is restricted to intravenous drug users and male homosexuals who practice risk behavior. Drug hypothesis. Since 1981, 94% of all American AIDS cases have been from risk groups that have used recreational drugs. About 1/3 of these were intravenous drug users and 2/3 were male homosexuals who had practiced risk behavior by using oral recreational drugs and AZT. Thus, recreational drug use and AZT explain the restriction of AIDS to drug users. HIV hypothesis. Since its beginning in 1981, viral AIDS should have long entered the general population, just like all authentic infectious diseases. The failure to leave specific risk groups in more than a decade discredits the virus hypothesis. 9 out of 10 American and European AIDS patients are males. Drug hypothesis. 1. According to the NIDA and the Bureau of Justice Statistics, more than 75% of hard recreational drugs are consumed intravenously by males. The CDC reports that women are now the fastest-growing AIDS risk group. This also correlates with drug use statistics. According to the Federally Supported Drug Strategies Program, women now claim an increasing share of hard drugs. Women account for the fastest-growing population in jails and prisons, in large part because of drug offenses. 2. The CDC and independent investigators report that nearly all male homosexuals with AIDS and at risk for AIDS are long-term users of oral drugs such as nitrate inhalants, ethyl chloride inhalants, amphetamines, cocaine, and others to facilitate sexual contacts, particularly anal intercourse. The largest study of its kind, which investigated nitrate inhalant use in a cohort of more than 3,000 male homosexuals from Chicago, Baltimore, Los Angeles, and Pittsburgh, reports a consistent and strong cross-sectional association with anal sex. 3. Many HIV-positive homosexuals are prescribed AZT as an antiviral drug. Since intravenous drug users, who are 75% male, make up 1/3 of all AIDS patients, and male homosexuals make up almost 2/3 of all American AIDS patients, the drug hypothesis explains why 9 out of 10 American AIDS patients are males. The same applies to European AIDS. HIV hypothesis. According to the hypothesis that AIDS is a sexually transmitted viral disease, AIDS should have long equilibrated between the sexes exactly as predicted by the AIDS establishment. All other sexually transmitted diseases are equally distributed between the sexes. Since 1981, the wives of the 15,000 HIV-positive hemophiliacs should also have contracted AIDS from their husbands, but none of this has happened to date in the United States and Europe. Pediatric AIDS in America and Europe is restricted to babies born to drug-addicted mothers. Drug hypothesis. According to the drug hypothesis, babies acquire AIDS diseases from cocaine and heroin shared with their mothers during pregnancy. Indeed, about 80% of pediatric AIDS cases in America and Europe are children born to mothers who were intravenous drug users during pregnancy. The remainder reflects the normal, low incidence of AIDS-defining diseases among newborns. HIV hypothesis. All babies born to HIV-positive mothers should have AIDS. However, since HIV is a harmless, perinatally transmitted retrovirus, only babies born to drug-addicted mothers develop AIDS. For example, thousands of HIV-positive, healthy recruits are identified and rejected each year by the U.S. Army, although they have probably been HIV-positive since their date of birth. Why AIDS now? Drug hypothesis. In the United States, recreational drug use has increased over the past decades from statistically undetectable levels to epidemic levels at about the same rate as AIDS. For example, cocaine consumption increased 200-fold from 1980 to 1990 based on cocaine seizures that increased from 500 kilograms in 1980 to 100,000 kilograms in 1990. During the same time, cocaine-related hospital emergencies increased from 3,296 cases in 1981 to 80,355 cases in 1990 and to 119,843 in 1992. In the past 3 years, the increase of cocaine consumption has slowed down at the expense of increases in heroin consumption, which were accompanied by increases in heroin-related hospital emergencies. Heroin-related hospital emergencies doubled from more than 30,000 in 1990 to over more than 60,000 in 1993. Nitrate consumption jumped from a few medical applications to millions of doses annually in the 1980s. According to a recent report from the NIDA and the CDC, nitrate use has increased in the 1990s in gay men in Chicago and San Francisco after a decline in the 1980s. The dosage units of amphetamine confiscated in the war on drugs jumped from 2 million in 1981 to 97 million in 1989. On this basis, the Bureau of Justice Statistics estimates that amphetamine consumption has increased 100-fold during the same time. Drug offenders are now the largest and fastest-growing category in the federal prison's population, accounting for 61% of the total, compared with 38% in 1986. The number of federal drug offenders increased from about 5,000 in 1980 to about 55,000 in 1993. In 1993, between 60% and 80% of the 112 million prisoners in the United States had been on illicit drugs. The German Rauschgiftbilanz reports an 11.2% increase in the consumption of illicit recreational drugs in 1994 compared to 1993. Consider a grace period of about 10 years to achieve the dosage needed to cause irreversible disease, and you can date the origin of AIDS in 1981 as a consequence of the drug use epidemic that started in America in the late 1960s during the Vietnam War. Indeed, AIDS increased from a few dozen cases annually in 1981 to about 100,000 in 1993. Note that the spread of AIDS and the spread of cocaine and cocaine-related hospital emergencies are parallel since 1981. Since 1987, AZT and other DNA chain terminators have been added to the list of toxic drugs consumed by AIDS patients and those at risk for AIDS. AZT is now prescribed to about 200,000 HIV positives worldwide. Thus, the drug hypothesis explains 1. Why the AIDS epidemic occurred when it did in America and Europe, and 2. Why it spread steadily according to drug consumption. HIV hypothesis. Since HIV is an old virus in the United States and is established in a steady population of 1 million ever since it was detectable in 1984, it cannot explain a new epidemic. Moreover, according to Farr's law, a new infectious epidemic should have exploded, but AIDS did not. The spread of AIDS and the non-spread of HIV, the hypothetical cause of AIDS, are entirely incompatible with each other since 1984. Not all drug users get AIDS. Drug hypothesis. There are currently between 3 million and 8 million cocaine addicts and 6 million heroin addicts in the United States. In 1980, 5 million Americans had used nitrate inhalants. In 1989, at least 100 million doses of amphetamines were consumed in the United States. Most of the 401,749 American AIDS cases since 1981 have been recruited from this large reservoir of drug users. According to a 1994 survey of the NIDA, more than 5%, 221,000 of the 4 million women who give birth each year use illicit drugs during their pregnancy. These mothers are the reservoir from which most of the 11,117 pediatric AIDS cases reported in the United States in 1994 were recruited. Unfortunately, scientific documentation of recreational drug use is extremely sporadic and inaccessible, not only because these drugs are illegal, but more important, because the medical scientific community is totally uninterested in drugs as a cause of AIDS. In addition, about 150,000 HIV-positive Americans were on AZT in 1992. There are no national statistics available on how many HIV-positive Americans are on anti-HIV drugs that, like AZT, are designed to kill human cells. The relatively small percentage of AIDS patients among the many American drug users reflects the percentage with the highest lifetime dose of drug use, just like the 300,000 annual lung cancer and emphysema patients reflect the highest lifetime tobacco dose of the 50 million smokers in the United States. The long latent period of HIV is a euphemism for the time needed to accumulate the drug dosage that is sufficient for AIDS. Therefore, it takes about 10 years of injecting heroin and cocaine to develop weight loss, tuberculosis, bronchitis, pneumonia, and other drug-induced diseases. The time lag from initiating a habit of inhaling nitrates to acquiring Kaposi sarcoma has been determined to be 7 to 10 years. The different latent periods of HIV are simply reflections of the time the human host takes to accumulate sufficient drug dosage for AIDS to occur. Blaming Kaposi sarcoma on HIV after inhaling carcinogenic nitrates for 10 years is like blaming lung cancer and emphysema on a slow virus after smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day for 20 years. AZT at the currently prescribed high doses of 0.5 to 1.5 grams per person per day causes many of the above-described AZT-specific diseases faster than recreational drugs do, i.e. within weeks or months after administration, because AZT is much more toxic than recreational drugs. In short, disease from drug use is not an all-or-nothing phenomenon like disease from infection. Only high cumulative doses cause irreversible damage and disease. HIV hypothesis. The virus hypothesis can explain neither why AIDS is linked to drugs nor why the risk of AIDS depends on the lifetime dosage of drugs. Risk group-specific AIDS diseases. Drug hypothesis. Group-specific drug use explains the following risk group-specific AIDS diseases. 1. Kaposi sarcoma specific for male homosexuals. Kaposi sarcoma as an AIDS diagnosis is 20 times more common among homosexuals who use nitrate inhalants than among AIDS patients who are intravenous drug users or hemophiliacs. Due to their carcinogenic potential, nitrates were originally proposed as causes of Kaposi sarcoma. Aggressive and life-threatening Kaposi sarcoma, particularly pulmonary Kaposi sarcoma, lung cancer, are exclusively observed in male homosexuals. Up to 32% of Kaposi sarcomas of homosexual men can be diagnosed as pulmonary Kaposi sarcoma. This lends additional support to the nitrate Kaposi sarcoma hypothesis, since the lungs are the primary site of exposure to nitrate inhalants. Pulmonary Kaposi sarcoma has never been observed by Moritz Kaposi, nor was it observed by others prior to the AIDS epidemic. It appears that the nitrate-induced AIDS Kaposi sarcoma and the classic Kaposi sarcomas are entirely different cancers under the same name. The HIV-associated Kaposi sarcomas observed in male homosexuals are aggressive and life-threatening, fatal within 8 to 10 months after diagnosis, and often located in the lung. The classic indolent and chronic Kaposi sarcomas are diagnosed on the skin of the lower extremities and hardly progress over many years. Maduri and others point out that the pulmonary involvement by the neoplasma has been an unusual clinical finding in the Kaposi sarcomas of male homosexuals compared to all classic Kaposi sarcomas. Nevertheless, the distinction between classic and AIDS Kaposi sarcoma is hardly ever emphasized. It may have escaped many observers due to the difficulty in pre-mortem diagnosis, as pulmonary Kaposi sarcoma was indistinguishable from opportunistic pneumonia. The immunotoxicity and cytotoxicity of nitrates also explains the proclivity of male homosexual nitrate users for pneumonia, which is the most common AIDS disease in the United States and Europe. Moreover, the immunotoxins and cytotoxins of cigarette smoke explain why, in two groups of otherwise matched HIV-positive male homosexuals, cigarette smokers develop pneumonia twice as often as non-smokers over a period of 9 months. 2. High mortality of intravenous drug users. Intravenous drug users suffer from long-term malnutrition and insomnia, which are primary causes of immunodeficiency worldwide. This explains the tuberculosis, pneumonia, and weight loss that are typical of these risk groups. Injection of unsterile drugs combined with immunodeficiency also cause septicemia and endocarditis, which are common in AIDS patients who are intravenous drug users. As a result, intravenous drug users have a high mortality. The average age at death is 29.6 years for HIV-free and 31.5 years for HIV-positive addicts, according to a German study. And both HIV-positive and negative intravenous drug users die from the same disorders, according to an American study. 3. Low birth weight and mental retardation of AIDS babies. 80% of American European babies with AIDS are born to mothers who were intravenous drug users during pregnancy. Their symptoms range from low birth weight and mental retardation to immunodeficiency through maternal drug use. The B-cell deficiencies and certain bacterial infections, which are both considered AIDS-defining only in children, are both consequences of the immunodeficiency acquired from the drugs their mothers used during pregnancy. 4. Anemia, wasting, and accelerated death of AZT recipients. Anemia, leukopenia, pancytopenia, diarrhea, weight loss, hair loss, impotence, hepatitis, and pneumocystis pneumonia are observed in recipients of AZT and other DNA chain terminators. These are predictable consequences of the cytotoxicity of these drugs. In addition, non-renewal of mitochondrial DNA causes muscle atrophy, hepatitis, and dementia, and carcinogenic activity causes cancers, such as lymphoma in AZT recipients. Owing to the carcinogenic activity of AZT, the lymphoma rate of AZT-treated AIDS patients is a staggering 9% per year or 50% in 3 years, according to the National Cancer Institute. Compared to untreated controls, AZT recipients develop AIDS 4.5 times more often and die 2.4 times more often or 25% more often, or live only 2 years instead of 3 years with AIDS. In short, specific drugs cause specific diseases. HIV hypothesis. The virus hypothesis is clueless. On genetic grounds, the same virus must cause the same disease or diseases in the same host. Just as a specific instrument makes a specific sound, a specific virus causes a specific disease in all risk groups. For example, hepatitis virus causes the same hepatitis, and wart virus causes the same warts in men, women, homosexuals, and heterosexuals. Non-correlation between HIV and AIDS. Drug hypothesis. The drug hypothesis predicts AIDS without HIV. HIV without AIDS, and other non-correlations. All of these predictions are confirmed. 1. Long-term survivors or non-progressors, persons infected by HIV from more than the 10-year latent period from HIV to AIDS, are called long-term survivors and, more recently, non-progressors if they are studied by HIV researchers. Indeed, the vast majority of HIV positives are long-term survivors. Worldwide, they number 17 million, including 1 million HIV positive but healthy Americans and 0.5 million HIV positive but healthy Europeans. Most of these have been HIV positive for at least 10 years now, because their numbers have not changed since the time between 1984 to 1988, when the HIV testing epidemic began in the respective countries. Only about 6%, or 11,025,073 of the 18 million HIV positives, including the 17 million without AIDS, have developed AIDS diseases since AIDS statistics have been kept. Since no more than 6% of HIV carriers worldwide have developed AIDS in 7 to 10 years, the annual AIDS risk of an HIV carrier is less than 11% per year. However, even this low figure is not corrected for the normal occurrence of the 30 AIDS-defining diseases in HIV-free controls. It may well reflect the normal incidence of these diseases in most people. There is no evidence that HIV-positive people who are not drug users have a higher morbidity or mortality than HIV-free controls. David Ho, director of the Aaron Diamond AIDS Research Center of New York, recently gave the key to long-term survival with HIV. None had received antiretroviral therapy. Likewise, Alvaro Munoz from the Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore reported that not one of the long-term survivors of the largest federally funded study of male homosexuals at risk for AIDS, the MAC study, had used AZT. And several survey studies document that, in addition to abstaining from antiviral drugs, long-term survivors are those who have given up or never taken recreational drugs. 2. Intravenous drug users and male homosexuals lose their T cells prior to HIV infections. Prospective studies of male homosexuals using psychoactive and sexual stimulants have demonstrated that their T cells may decline prior to infection with HIV. For example, the T cells of 37 homosexual men from San Francisco declined steadily prior to HIV infection for 1.5 years, from more than 1,200 to below 200 per microliter. In fact, some had fewer than 500 T cells, 1.5 years before seroconversion. Although recreational drug use was not mentioned in these articles, other studies of the same cohort, technical term for group of homosexual men from San Francisco, described extensive use of recreational drugs, including nitrates. Likewise, 33 HIV-free male homosexuals from Vancouver, Canada, had acquired immunodeficiency prior to HIV infection. Again, this study did not mention drug use, but in other articles, the authors reported that all men of this cohort had used nitrates, cocaine, and amphetamines. About 450, 16% of 2,795 homosexual American men of the MACS cohort from Chicago, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Los Angeles had acquired immunodeficiency, having fewer than 200 T cells per microliter without ever acquiring HIV. Many HIV-positive and negative men of this cohort had essentially the same degree of lymphadenopathy. Although seropositive men had a significantly higher mean number of involved lymph node groups than seronegative men, 5.7 compared to 4.5 nodes, p less than 0.005, the numerical difference in the means is not striking. According to previous studies on this cohort, 71% of these men had used nitrate inhalants. In addition to other drugs, 83% had used one drug and 60% had used two or more drugs during sex in the previous 6 months. Another study of the same cohort observed that the risk of developing AIDS correlated with the frequency of receptive anal intercourse prior to and after HIV infection, and receptive anal intercourse correlates directly with the use of nitrate vasodilators. Thus, in male homosexuals at risk for AIDS, AIDS often precedes infection by HIV, not vice versa. Since the cause must precede the consequence, drug use remains the only choice to explain acquired immunodeficiencies prior to HIV. If male homosexuality were to cause immunodeficiency, about 10% of the adult American male population, the estimated percentage of homosexuals, should have AIDS. Surveys, prospective studies of intravenous drug users also document T-cell losses prior to infection by HIV. For example, among intravenous drug users in New York, the relative risk for seroconversion among subjects with one or more CD4 T-cell count, 500 cells per microliter, compared with HIV-negative subjects with all counts, 500 cell per microliter, was 4.53. In other words, by the time these intravenous drug users were infected by HIV, their T-cells were already below 500. A similar study from Italy showed that a low number of T-cells was the highest risk factor for HIV infection. In other words, the T cells were dropping before HIV infection. Logic follows that drug consumption dropped the T cells. 3. HIV-free AIDS. One summary of the AIDS literature describes more than 4,621 clinically diagnosed AIDS cases were not infected by HIV. Additional cases are described that were not included in this summary. They include intravenous drug users, male homosexuals using aphrodisiac drugs like nitrate inhalants, and hemophiliacs developing immune suppression from long-term transfusion of foreign proteins contaminating factor VIII. Each of these non-correlations between HIV and AIDS are predicted by the hypothesis that recreational drugs and other non-contagious risk factors cause AIDS. HIV hypothesis. Since AIDS occurs without HIV and since T cells of drug addicts decrease prior to HIV infection, HIV must be discarded as a cause of AIDS. The studies of drug addicts prove instead that HIV is just a marker of drug consumption rather than the cause of AIDS. The more drugs consumed intravenously or for sex, the higher the risk of HIV infection. AIDS cured by withdrawal from recreational drugs and by discontinuation of AZT despite HIV. Drug hypothesis. If AIDS is caused by drugs, some patients should be able to recover if they abstain from drug use, even if they are HIV positive. The following examples prove this point. 1. AZT. 10 out of 11 HIV-positive AZT-treated AIDS patients recovered cellular immunity after discontinuing AZT in favor of an experimental vaccine. 2 weeks after discontinuing AZT, 4 out of 5 AIDS patients recovered from myopathy. 3 of 4 AIDS patients recovered from severe pancytopenia and bone marrow aplasia 4 to 5 weeks after AZT was discontinued. 2. Heroin cocaine. The incidence of AIDS diseases among HIV-positive intravenous drug users over 16 months was 19%, 23 to 124, and only 5%, 5 to 93, among those who stopped injecting drugs. The T-cell counts of HIV-positive intravenous drug users from New York dropped 35% over 9 months compared to HIV-positive controls who had stopped injecting. 3. Recreational drugs and AZT. The health of male homosexuals is stabilized or even improved by avoiding recreational drugs. For example, in August 1993, there was no mortality during 1.25 years in a group of 918 British HIV-positive homosexuals who had avoided the experimental medications on offer and chose to abstain from or significantly reduce their use of recreational drugs, including alcohol. Assuming an average 10-year latent period from HIV to AIDS, the virus AIDS hypothesis would have predicted at least 58 × 918 × 10 × 1.25 × 50%. AIDS cases among 918 HIV positives over 1.25 years. Indeed, the absence of mortality in this group over 1.25 years corresponds to a minimal latent period from HIV to AIDS of more than 1,148, 918 times 1.25 years. As of July 1, 1994, there was still not a single AIDS case in this group of 918 HIV-positive homosexuals. The T cells of 29% of 2,020 HIV-positive male homosexuals and intravenous drug users in a clinical trial even increased over 2 years. These HIV positives belong to the placebo arm of an AZT trial for AIDS prevention and thus were not treated by AZT. It is probable that under clinical surveillance, the 29% whose T cells increased despite HIV have given up or reduced immunosuppressive recreational drugs in the hope that AZT would prevent AIDS. 4. AIDS babies born to drug-addicted mothers recover after birth. HIV-positive babies born to mothers who were intravenous drug users during pregnancy provide the best examples for the prediction that termination of drug use prevents or cures AIDS despite the presence of HIV. For example, for 3 years, Blanche and others have observed 71 HIV-positive newborns who had shared intravenous drugs with their mothers prior to birth. 10 of these children developed encephalopathy and AIDS-defining diseases, of which 9 died during their first 18 months of life. The study points out that the risk of a newborn to develop AIDS was related directly with the severity of the disease in the mother at the time of delivery. Based on the severity of their symptoms, 60% of the children were treated prophylactically but apparently briefly with AZT for at least 1 month, and 50% were treated with sulfa drugs. Unexpectedly, 61 of the 71 HIV-positive children either developed only intermittent diseases from which they recovered during their first 18 months or developed no disease at all during the 3 years of observation. The T cells of these children increased after birth from low to normal levels despite the presence of HIV. A very similar picture emerges from a collaborative European study of HIV-positive newborns. The study reports that about 20% of the HIV-positive children had died or developed long-term AIDS during the first year after birth, and another 20% during the second and third year. About 10% of the children were treated with zidovudine, AZT, before 6 months of age, and 40% by 4 years. More than 60% of congenitally infected children proved to be healthy up to 6 years after birth, despite the presence of HIV. Most of these had experienced transient AIDS diseases, such as pneumonia, bacterial infections, candidiasis, and cryptosporidial infection during the first year after birth. Although the study does not even mention the health and health risks of the mothers, previous reports from the European Collaborative Study Group have documented that nearly all children were born to mothers who are intravenous drug users. In 1991, the European Collaborative Study Group reported that 80% of the children with pediatric AIDS were born to mothers who were intravenous drug users. The 1991 study further points out that children with drug withdrawal symptoms were most likely to develop diseases, and that children with no withdrawal symptoms but whose mothers had used recreational drugs in the final 6 months of pregnancy were intermediate in their risk to develop diseases, although they were all infected by HIV. The drug hypothesis explains the fate of the children as a function of the drugs consumed. Those who received the highest doses of drugs before birth would have acquired irreversible diseases, and those who acquired diseases from sublethal thresholds would be able to recover after birth once they were no longer forced to share their mother's drugs. Indeed, both the European Collaborative Study Group and Blanche and others showed that the majority of children gained T cells and recovered from transient diseases after discontinuation of maternal drug input, despite the presence of HIV. The children's risk for AIDS was related directly with the severity of the disease in the mother, which is an expression for the extent of drug consumption by the mother. Moreover, the harm of maternal drug consumption to sick babies was compounded after birth because prophylactic treatment with sulfamethoxazole and zidovudine, AZT, was started earlier and was more frequent among the 16 children born to mothers with class 4 disease, AIDS. The European Collaborative Study Group reports that 10% to 40% of HIV-positive children were treated with AZT. Although recent American epidemiological studies also avoid revealing the poor correlations between HIV infection and AIDS, the correlation between HIV and pediatric AIDS in the United States appears to be similar to Europe. A recent report from Baltimore confirmed that 60% of the mothers of HIV-positive American babies studied by HIV researchers are intravenous drug users, and the CDC reported that 12,240, 82% of the 14,920 children born with an HIV diagnosis in the United States from 1978 to 1993 are alive and well despite the presence of HIV. It follows that discontinuation of recreational and antiretroviral drug use stabilizes and even cures AIDS in HIV positives. Likewise, the T cells of HIV positive hemophiliacs increase after removal of immunosuppressive foreign proteins from their factor VIII therapy. And the T cells of African HIV positive tuberculosis patients increase after standard anti-TB treatment and improved nutrition. HIV hypothesis. According to the HIV hypothesis, every infected adult and baby should have progressively lost T cells and developed AIDS. This was not observed. On the contrary, HIV-positive AIDS patients recovered once freed of AZT and recreational drugs despite the continued presence of the hypothetical T cell killer HIV. In sum, the drug AIDS hypothesis correctly predicts all aspects of American-European AIDS, while the HIV hypothesis predicts none. The solution to the AIDS crisis. Testing the drug hypothesis should have a very high priority in AIDS research because this hypothesis makes verifiable predictions. Drug toxicity must be determined experimentally by exposing animals, such as mice or humans, with carefully monitored doses over appropriate periods of time. Except for experiments measuring immediate effects of psychoactive drugs, no such experiments have ever been done in animals or humans. Alternatively, drug toxicity could be tested epidemiologically in humans who are addicted to recreational drugs or are prescribed AZT by comparing their diseases with those, if any, of otherwise matched drug-free controls. Such tests could be conducted at a fraction of the cost that is now invested in the HIV hypothesis. But $35 billion AIDS dollars have been plowed entirely into studying HIV since 1984, leaving the comparatively tiny field of drug toxicity with virtually no support at all. Most illegal drugs have been given only to mice or rats in a single dose, looking for the short-term effects. Until researchers can perform long-term experiments, the role of drugs in AIDS will never be completely understood. Certainly, the evidence above strongly proves that drugs can more easily cause AIDS than could any microbe, particularly microbes that are latent and neutralized by antimicrobial immunity. If the drug hypothesis proves to be correct, AIDS could be prevented entirely by existing technologies and institutions if 1. AZT use, currently the most toxic legal threat to public health, were banned immediately. 2. Illicit recreational drugs were reduced or prevented by education that drugs cause AIDS. 3. AIDS patients were treated for their specific diseases, for example, for tuberculosis with antibiotics, for Kaposi sarcoma with conventional cancer therapy, for weight loss with good nutrition, and were instructed to avoid recreational drugs and AZT. In addition to saving about 75,000 lives per year from AIDS in the United States alone, the drug hypothesis could save American taxpayers up to $20 billion annually. Currently, the federal government spends annually $7.5 billion on AIDS treatment, research, and education, and $13 billion on the war on drugs that is mainly concerned with supply control, interdiction, methadone treatment, and education. But neither AIDS education nor drug education ever target the health effects of long-term drug use. However, if programs for AIDS prevention and drug education were based on the health consequences of long-term drug use, AIDS prevention would be as successful as the federal anti-smoking program. As a result of education that smoking causes lung cancer, emphysema, and heart disease, smoking has dropped in the United States from 42% of the adult population in 1965 to 25% in 1995. The solution to AIDS could be as close as a very testable and very affordable alternative hypothesis. The next chapter describes imminent signs of change, showing that the truth is finally emerging and outlines a solution for restoring science to its legitimate roots.